Listener Production.
A few hours ago, I discharged my last duty as king and emperor.
And I suppose in love.
Whatever in love means.
My mother would have known that she'd been deceived.
Finally, the second son of Diana got hitched.
Hello and welcome to The Royal Record, your insider's guide to what's really going on behind palace gates.
I'm Bryce Corbett, podcaster and journalist, and I'm joined by Australia's leading authority on the royals, Juliet Reedon, editor-at-large of the Australian Women's Weekly and author of the acclaimed Royals in Australia. Back again for another action-packed week of dissecting the royal headlines and separating fact from fiction. And it's been another big week in royaldom, Juliet. What's on the menu for today?
It certainly has. I thought we'd kick off with a little Netflix starter. Ooh. I've got some news from the Crown TV series. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to follow with details of Will and Kate's recent tour of Scotland. And, you know, that tells us an awful lot about the next steps for the House of Windsor, I think. Uh-huh. And finally, Harry and Meghan. Is there a baby on the way?
Ooh, sounds delectable. Shall we jump straight in?
Yes, let's.
Okay, so big news at the end of last week. The all-conquering Netflix series, The Crown, will feature two episodes concentrating on UK journalist Martin Bashir's supposed grooming of Diana for that explosive 1995 BBC interview. Now, series five is to be aired next year, but a source close to the show has already told the United Kingdom's Telegraph newspaper that scripts have been written and that researchers have delved very deeply into the whole BBC interview debate. Buckle, Juliet, this is not going to play well for Mr. Bashir, is it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, of course, the show is not a documentary. It's fictional entertainment. And I imagine Martin Bashir is going to be portrayed as the villain of this piece with his deceitful behaviour put under dramatic scrutiny. Mm-hmm. You know, as we know, the BBC's report found that the reporter falsified documents and perpetrated outlandish lies about members of the royal family that fueled Diana, the Princess of Wales's feelings of paranoia. So, no, he's definitely not going to come out smelling of roses, nor should he.
Mm. Or the BBC, for that matter. They're not going to come out smelling of roses either, I shouldn't imagine.
No, and while the series, I'm sure, will throw light on the gravity of Martin Bashir's actions, and I think raking it over again is very much against those wishes of Prince William,
right,
who wanted the entire Bashir episode to be put to bed. And he said so in that passionate speech he made following the report's release. Let's take a listen to what he said.
It is my firm view that this panorama programme holds no legitimacy and should never be aired again.
I imagine that interview, or at least a dramatised version of that interview, will be replayed again in The Crown, which will be painful. Yeah. For William and Harry. But in fairness, it does sound as if it will be presented in its proper context this time, with the spotlight firmly on how Diana, their mother, was duped.
Yeah, and of course, local angle, the Aussie actress Elizabeth Debicki will be stepping into the Diana role for season five. Mm. And I'm loving this. Imelda Staunton will be taking the role of the Queen from Olivia Colman, who I absolutely love.
I think she's going to be brilliant. She's going to
be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, both of them. I mean, Olivia Colman's amazing, but Imelda Staunton, I can't wait to see what she does with the role. But interestingly, of course, Netflix is the company with which Harry has a commercial arrangement. Is this complicated for him?
I think it is, yes. You know, Meghan and Harry signed a reported multi-million dollar deal with Netflix to make documentaries and various other programmes. And, you know, for me, it does feel awkward that The Crown is the trailblazing drama from that streaming network. You know, this is the same company the couple are working for. And I can't imagine Prince Harry has any influence over the content of The Crown, but I think it would be awkward for him.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, Britain seems to have already put the drama of that Diana interview and Harry's documentary confessional with Oprah behind them, with front pages every single day last week covering William and Kate's visit to Scotland. Now, William started this tour with what I think we can agree was a poignant speech talking about his personal connection with Scotland. Let's have a listen.
Scotland is the source of some of my happiest memories, but also my saddest. I was in Balmoral when I was told that my mother had died. And yet alongside this painful memory is one of great joy, because it was here in Scotland, 20 years ago this year, that that I first met Catherine. Needless to say, the town where you meet your future wife holds a very special place in your heart.
Now, Juliet, call me a cynic, but is it a coincidence that William and Kate are pressing the flesh in Scotland only weeks after a recent election there revived talk of an independence referendum?
Look, I think this trip was a long time in the planning. Prince William was visiting Scotland in his role as Lord High Commissioner to the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland. This is an appointment made by Her Majesty the Queen. So that has nothing to do with independence. But of course, the timing can't be ignored, and it's played out pretty well. You know, the royals have long been used by the UK government in a role of soft diplomacy around the world. And there's no question that this tour will have kept Scotland's long historic bond with the royal family in the front of the minds of the Scottish people. You know, Prince William was in residence at Holyrood House Palace, and that's the Queen's official Scottish palace. And this is the first time that William has held court here. It's pretty important historically. It places him as a future monarch.
All right.
And, you know, one of the most famous monarchs to live in Holyrood Palace was Mary, Queen of Scots. So, you know, this place has a real deep meaning in this part of the world. But it wasn't all about history. In fact, it was a very contemporary visit, with William and Kate hosting a drive-in, a screening of Cruella, the Disney movie for NHS workers.
Yeah,
and
nice.
In a cute touch, they drove one of Prince Philip's old Land Rovers. They were peering out of the front there, watching the film, joining their guests.
Now, apart from the timing and its political implications, this Scottish tour also is part of, wouldn't you agree, a concerted stepping up of engagements for the Cambridges. It's no accident, is it, Juliet, that we're seeing more of them? What's going on here?
You're right. They definitely have stepped up the ante. You know, the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge have carried out 174 engagements this year between them.
Wow.
Which the Times newspaper has just told us is significantly up from the same period 2 years ago. So that's the period prior to COVID, when they carried out just over half the number of engagements, you know, a total of 93. So that's a big jump. And, you know, when Harry and Meghan stepped back, there was concern that the glamour, if you like, left with them. Mm. But William and Kate are really winning hearts and minds, and their speeches and comments are notably more personal, you know, adding perhaps a little touch of Harry in there as they move the royal family forward.
I mean, this is interesting to me because it begs the question, why is Kate better able to handle the attention and scrutiny than Meghan apparently was?
I think you have to remember that Kate and William dated for a decade before they got married. You know, that gave Kate time to get used to that new world within the royal family and decide for herself whether it would work. She clearly wanted it to work. She liked it. She enjoys this world. You know, Kate's also English, so she understands what the royal family is all about.
Right.
She understands the history, the culture. She understands what is expected. Mm. She understands all that protocol and pomp and ceremony. And I think Meghan fell in love with Harry, and then she considered the world she was entering. It all happened pretty quickly. Mm. And, you know, while some people suggested she was social climbing, I don't think that's the case at all. Because you need to remember, she left a very good career behind her, and she had to leave that career in order to join the royal family.
Yeah.
And I suspect maybe she thought that she could use her new role as a platform to advance various causes close to her heart. But mm-hmm. then when she got there, it wasn't what she thought it would be. She couldn't control her working life as she was used to doing. And she's talked a lot about that issue, about sort of losing control. And I don't think the same happened for Kate at all.
But on the whole, Kate has had an easier ride, hasn't she?
I don't think so, no. I think we have to remember those weighty Katie years when, you know, year after year they were talking about weighty Katie in the media, and she had a pretty awful time. Mm. You know, all the time she was dating, she didn't have that security detail and protection that you get as a member of the royal family. She was regularly chased by paparazzi in a way that Meghan never was. You know, the paps would hide in the bushes and shout abuse at her, hoping that she would turn around crying so they could get a photo of her. It was pretty grim.
Wow, what a life. Of course, Meghan and Harry have also been attracting their fair share of headlines too, especially in Britain, where in the fallout from Harry's doco with Oprah, in which he was deemed by the British press to have once again thrown his family under the bus, there's a poll running now in one newspaper asking if they should be stripped of their HRH titles.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of media commentary around this, but this is just one poll. I don't think it has any credence. And to me, it feels more like a media beat up. I mean, the idea behind this narrative, which I think is worth discussing, is that following those Oprah encounters in which Harry has plainly said he felt trapped in the royal family, he didn't want this job. That royal role was affecting his and his wife's mental health. We have to wonder why would he and Meghan therefore want to still use their titles? You know, they still use that Duke and Duchess and they are entitled to use HRH.
It feels like he wants a title and the benefits that come with it to get those Netflix and Spotify deals, but he doesn't seem to want the duty that comes along with it. I mean, if you think about it, if he was working in a company and he started bagging the company that he worked for, he'd be sacked.
Yes, I think so. You know, that idea of bringing the royal family into disrepute is definitely at the forefront of some of the things he's saying, although I don't imagine Harry means it to be like that. But, you know, this argument's going to continue for a long time in the UK. And I actually think that Harry and Meghan are a brand now without their titles. So I don't think it really matters if the titles go. But it'll be interesting to see what happens.
He's not about to let go of that dukedom, though. Who can blame him?
Wow.
Everybody's talking about it.
No way.
You just blew my mind.
I can't believe it.
Are you for royal?
This is a segment where we take a royal story that beggars belief and hold it up to scrutiny. Now, JR, I know every week I ask you, when is Harry and Meghan's baby due? But the interesting thing is that not only do we not know the due date, but for all we know, baby Sussex could already have been born and we just don't know about it. Is that possible?
Well, thanks for the conspiracy theory, Bryce, there. But, you know, in truth, I guess it is possible. We all remember the fuss around the birth of baby Archie with the media not being told until many hours afterwards. And many of the details that were usually told, such as who the godparents are, where the baby was born, they weren't revealed at all. So I think it's highly possible that Harry and Meghan, who are now not working royals, they're free agents and are under no obligation to put their daughter on public display. They, you know, they might not tell us till long time afterwards, at a time when it suits them.
So she might be here. She may already have been born.
Well, yes. I guess if she has, you heard it here first, but I don't think she has. And I'm sure we will be told, but it could be sometime afterwards, you know, when Harry and Meghan are ready. But
yeah.
While baby Sussex won't be a princess, she will, of course, be eighth in the succession line to the throne. So in many ways, it is legitimate royal news, but it's all in Harry and Meghan's hands now.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. All right, it's almost time to go, but before we do, Juliet, what can we expect from the royal week ahead?
Well, reports out of the White House suggest that President Joe Biden and his wife Jill are set to meet the Queen and other members of the royal family when they visit the UK in a couple of weeks' time for the G7 summit.
Right.
And around the same time is the Trooping of the Colour. It's going to go ahead. That's on June the 12th.
Uh-huh. This is the Huzzah.
Annual celebration for the Queen's official birthday. It had been scaled back because of COVID restrictions, but recent reports suggest that it's going to be bigger with more pomp and ceremony, although it will still be at Windsor Castle rather than Buckingham Palace.
How can there be more pomp and ceremony? I mean, God, they corner the market in pomp, that mob. Love it. Well, that's all we have time for, sadly. Be sure to join us again next week as we pull back the curtain just that little bit further on the fascinating machinations behind the House of Windsor. This is Bryce Corbett and Juliet Reedon signing off for another week and reminding you all to keep it royal, people.
Listener.